Beloved Bhagwan, Rinzai said, if you want to be comfortably independent, free from birth and death, and free to go or stay, you should recognize the one who is here now, listening to my expounding of the Dharma. This one has neither form nor shape, and neither roots nor branches. This one has no place of abode, and this one is lively and active and performs its function according to circumstances beyond all conceptions of location. If you search for him, he will flee away from you, and if you long for him, he will oppose you. So he is called the Mysterious One. If you give rise to a thought of love in your mind, you will be drowned by water. If you give rise to a thought of anger in your mind, you will be burned by fire. If you give rise to a thought of doubt in your mind, you will be obstructed by earth. If you give rise to a thought of joy, you will be whirled away by wind. If you can discern all this, you will not be affected by objective things, which you can turn to your own advantage. Then you can walk on water as if on the ground, and walk on the ground as if on water. Why is this possible? Because you already understand that the four elements are like a dream and a transformation. Therefore, followers of the way, the one who is now listening to my expounding of the Dharma is certainly not your four elements, but one who can make use of your four elements. If you hold such a view, you will then be free to go or stay.
Manisa, one of the most important things to be understood is that the language goes on changing with time. What looked very significant 1,000 years before will not look very significant now. What was thought to be very profound in the times of Gautam Buddha will be thought to be childish today. Talking on these ancient masters, I am in a constant difficulty because their language does not belong to the contemporary intelligence. I have to bring the essence in the contemporary context. Otherwise, they will look just mythological, talking about nonsense. And perhaps it was possible for the primitive man not to object to them, but for the modern mind, it is impossible not to object. And the master's whole status is that he should be in a position where your trust deepens and is not disturbed. If the master disturbs your trust, he is taking you farther away from yourself. Because your undisturbed being, settled, centered at home, is the realization of truth. So I have to be very careful with all these old masters. They used the language of their times. It was perfectly right in that context. But today, the essence is perfectly right, but the language is no more relevant. It is true about all the masters I will be speaking to you. It is not only about Rinzai. I will tell you where it becomes difficult for the contemporary intelligence. Rinzai said, if you want to be comfortably independent, free from birth and death, and free to go or stay, you should recognize the one who is here now listening to my expounding of Dharma. In a simpler way, what he is saying is, don't be concerned what I say, but be concerned who is listening in you. It does not matter what I am saying. What matters that you are awake and listening. Listening is a great art. Just experience the listener and you will not go astray. Particularly Zen masters want you to be free from birth and death. That is not the case with other so-called religions. Most of the religions prevalent in the world begin with birth and end with death. The East has concentrated its genius on a single point to search where we were before we were born, and are we going to survive the death? And the extraordinary conclusion without any exceptions has been found that if we go deeper enough into ourselves, there is a space which is eternal, immortal. It knows nothing of birth, nothing of death. It is simply a traveler, an eternal traveler. It is an explorer of different forms, different ways of being. It has been in a tree and blossomed into flowers. It has been in a line and rolled like a line. It has been throughout the universe in different forms. It is a great journey. If you can see the variety of the experiences, man is at a point from where either he can continue the journey into forms, or he can jump out of the circle of birth and death and merge into the universe, losing its individuality, becoming one with the cosmos. It is just possible only for men. That is his dignity. But many of human beings will not use this opportunity of jumping into the universal soul and dissolving themselves. Rinzai is saying, if you want to be comfortably independent, free from birth and death, and free to go or stay, you should recognize the one who is here now, listening to my expounding of Dharma. We have to bring the statement to this moment. Who is listening to me? Is it just your mind? If it is just your mind, it is not going to transform your being. If you are listening with silence, then you are listening with the heart. That is going to transform your being. The heart simply gets the essential message. Mind only gets the words, and the message is between the words. Only the heart is capable. And if you go even more deeper, then your being is there. Heart is a door towards your being, and your being is the opening towards the universal being. Listening a master is not necessary. You can listen to the wind passing through the pine trees. You can listen to the music of Mozart with the same silence. You can listen to the birds. The whole universe is expounding the Dharma. Just the listener is missing. And the art of meditation is the art of listening with your total being. This very moment, in this silence, your boundaries draw, your defenses draw. You become one whole. There are not 10,000 people, but just one ocean of consciousness. Just listen so deeply that you disappear and only the essential and the eternal in you remains. This one, the listener, has neither form nor shape, space and neither roots nor branches. This one has no place of abode. And this one is lively and active and performs its function according to circumstances beyond all. Beyond all conceptions of location, if you search for him, he will flee away from you. And if you long for him, he will oppose you. So he is called the mysterious one. A very great statement. Such statements come only rarely in the world. They make the mystic a miracle. What he is saying is, if you try to seek it, you will not find it, because it is not an object. Secondly, if you try to find it, you are being very foolish, because it is within you. The seeker himself is the sought. Once you start seeking it somewhere else, you are going on the wrong paths, which are thousands. There is only one path, which is the right path. And on the right path, you have not to go anywhere but to remain home. Just to be. No search, no desire, no longing. And in that silent and peaceful moment, there is a possibility you will find your Buddha. It is there. But if you start looking for him here and there, you are going to be a failure. Search for him, he will flee away. And if you long for him, he will oppose you. Neither seek, nor desire, nor long. Just be at ease. You are already it. You don't need any improvement, any refinement. And you don't need to go somewhere else. And you don't have to become somebody else. As you are, existence is expressing in you. With all its glory, don't go anywhere and don't long for anything, because everything is already given to you. Because of this situation, Rinzai calls it, so it is called, the mysterious one. The mystery is, if you seek it, you will never find it. And if you long for it, you are lost. Just no seeking, no longing, no desire. Sitting at ease. Becoming more and more settled and centered, and you have it, because you are it. If you give rise to a thought of love in your mind, you will be drowned by water. If you give rise to a thought of anger in your mind, you will be burned by fire. If you give rise to a thought of doubt in your mind, you will be obstructed by earth. Just metaphors. All that he is saying is, any rise of thought in you, and you have missed the point. A single thought is an enough obstruction to your inner space. It takes you away. Whether it is a thought of love or mind or anger, or greed, it does not matter what is the quality of the thought. It may be a good thought, a bad thought, a very saintly thought, or a very unsaintly one. It does not matter. Thought as such takes you away from your settled peace with the universe. If you give rise to a thought of joy, you will be whirled away by wind. If you can discern all this, you will not be affected by objective things, which you can turn to your own advantage. Then you can walk on water as if on the ground, and walk on the ground as if on water. Don't take this statement in a factual way, as Christians have done. What he is saying is simply that the outer world to the innermost being is just a dream. In the dream, you have walked on water. In the dream, you have flown in the sky. In the dream, everything is possible. But when you wake up, you find the dream water, the dream fire, the dream sky, they were all imagination and nothing else. But these statements made with absolute good intentions create trouble later on, because people start thinking that unless you can walk on water, you are not a self-realized one. The miracles of Jesus walking on water are rising dead Lazarus back to life. A great search by Christian experts itself shows that these things never happened, that they have been added by later on, almost 300 years later, to make Jesus look special, not an ordinary human being, but really a Son of God. For 2,000 years, Christians have been denying. They have been insisting that these are facts. Now, in the light of the science and more intelligence, even Christian scholars are saying that these are only metaphors added by the disciples to raise their master to a superior and higher position in such a way that nobody can compete with him. I have heard that two Christian bishops visiting Jerusalem had a very great friend, a rabbi, and they asked him to show all the holy places. The rabbis took them to many places which were concerned with Jesus, where he raised Lazarus, where he made water turn into wine, and then at the Lake Galilee, he took them to the place which is thought where he walked on water. The rabbi said, "Would you like to have a demonstration?" The bishops could not believe. They said, "Can you do it?" He said, "If Jesus can do it, an old Jew, why we cannot do? Every rabbi can do it." He said, "My God, we used to think that it is something special." They said, "It is very ordinary as far as Judaism is concerned." So the rabbi got out from the boat, went few feet away, came back. The bishops could not believe their eyes. But they were stunned. One bishop said that if you can do it, we are believers in Jesus. Can I also try? The rabbi said, "It is perfectly good, you can try. If your faith is right, you will be able to walk on water." But he got out of the boat from the different side and immediately started drowning and shouting, "Help! Help!" So the rabbi asked the other bishop, "Should we say to the old boy the right way to walk on the water? That is on this side of the boat. There are stones. You have to know exactly where the stones are. Then anybody can walk." Poor fellow stepped on the wrong side. Faith or no faith, is going to hell. But people go on insisting on things. Particularly the priesthood of all the religions. Nikos Kazantzakis was expelled from the Orthodox Church of Greece because he wrote a book on Jesus as if He is a human being, not as a son of God. Of course, human beings cannot walk on water. They go in water in a proper way, in a small boat or a big boat. But the Orthodox Church expelled him from the church that you are making Jesus Christ a human being. In his book, Jesus Christ Falls in Love with Mary Magdalene, now that is absolutely insulting to the Orthodox mind. Just yesterday, Ananda brought me the news that in America they have been trying to make a film on that book, but every time government comes in, the church comes in, and huge demonstrations that the making of the film should be stopped. And the only point in the film they insist is wrong, which is very human. Jesus hanging on the cross falls asleep, nothing to do, and thinks of Mary Magdalene. This is the problem. He simply dreams of his girlfriend. Now, again, another producer has taken up courage, knowing perfectly well that the film will be banned, will have to go underground, but it is worth to be making. To bring Jesus down to the earth, to make him a son of the earth. What is wrong in it? Poor fellow is hanging on the cross. Is it not enough? You cannot give him even a little solace of dreaming about his girlfriend? I don't think there is any wrong about it. In fact, if Jesus was ever crucified, he must have thought of Mary Magdalene. What else was there to think of? He was finished with God. He has shouted at God that, "Father, have you forsaken me?" Because 6 hours have passed, I am hanging, and no miracle is happening. I was hoping that you will be coming sitting on a white cloud, playing on the harp. Hallelujah! I see all around there is no white cloud. No song on the harp, no sign that you are even aware that your only begotten son is being hanged. In such a situation, it is absolutely natural that he must have said in his mind, "Fuck it." What else to do? And he must have remembered that he had been stupid unnecessarily. Otherwise, a beautiful woman and he could have lived silently, peacefully, unnecessarily got into this trip. All these people have been made 90% fictitious. For the simple reason to raise them superior to humanity. Therefore, followers of the way, the one who is now listening to my expounding of the Dharma is certainly not your four elements, but one who can make use of your four elements. Buddhists believe that the body is made of four elements. And the fifth is your consciousness, which is not part of the body, but lives in the body, can go out, can enter into another womb, this fifth is your reality. In your deep silence, you start disentangling yourself from the body, from the mind, from the heart. And what remains is just a pure space. This pure space is the origin of you and all. And this pure space has never changed. It is always here and now. It knows no time, no space. It fills the whole universe, which is infinite. Once you have known it, your life changes. If you hold such a view, remember it should not be only a view. If you experience such space, you will then be free to go or stay. Once you have known this space, you have known freedom. And then it is up to you to remain into form to change the form, or simply to disappear into the infinity of existence. As far as I know, nobody who has known this space has ever entered into another form. The enlightened man's life is his last life. Why he should bother to get into another headache? Why he should get into another imprisonment, which has illness, sickness, oldness, death, and thousands of miseries? It is only the unconscious human being who goes on groping from womb to womb. The conscious one simply leaves this body and becomes part of the sky. There is no need to be confined unless you love to torture yourself. Nobody has done that up to now. Perhaps nobody can do. Seeing the freedom of infinity, who is going to look back towards a form, a body, with all its suffering, misery, troubles? It is just against nature. Nibutsu wrote, "One who rises, rises of himself. One who falls, falls from himself. Autumn dew, spring breeze, nothing can possibly interfere. One who rises, rises of himself. It is spontaneous. One who falls, falls from himself. That too is spontaneous. Autumn dew, spring breeze, nothing can possibly interfere. Your freedom is total. Just you have to know your innermost center, and from there everything becomes spontaneous. Your love, your joy, your dance, your song, everything arises on its own, and then it has a beauty. Totally different when a poetry arises out of this silent space. It is not your composition. Ancient poets have not signed their names. Ancient sculptors have not signed their names on the statues. Even people who made immensely beautiful things like Taj Mahal have not left their name. Nobody knows who was the architect. But it must have arisen just like a poetry. It is poetry in marble. Music has arisen but it is a totally different kind, not the one that you compose. On the contrary, it composes you. Once a man has tasted the meditative space within him, everything that he touches becomes gold. Everything that happens around him has a grace and a beauty and a splendor and a majesty. It is a miracle. Bunan wrote, "Remain apart. The world is yours." A Buddha in the flesh. Just remember the Buddha in your flesh and the world is yours. You don't have to conquer it. It is already yours. But find out the Buddha in the flesh. Just few words and a whole philosophy. Remain apart. That is what I mean when I say be a witness. Remain apart. Just a watcher on the hill. Remain apart. The world is yours, a Buddha in the flesh. This remaining apart brings two things. One, a Buddha inside awakes, and the other, a new mastery over the whole existence. It is not political. It is existential. It does not need to have any map. It has no boundaries. Finding the Buddha in you, you have found the emperor. Manisha has asked, "Beloved Bhagwan, I have understood you to say lately that the Buddha, the mysterious one within us, is always there, constant, unaffected by whatever we do. I always had the feeling that the more often we are conscious, the more we nourish the inner Buddha. But if nothing we can do, negatively can diminish him, then my feeling must be just imagination. Is it?" Manisha, neither you can do anything negative to harm the Buddha inside you, nor you can do anything positive to nourish the Buddha inside you. It is complete and perfect in itself. All that you can do is by being conscious in your actions, you can recognize it. By unconscious actions, you can forget it. But you cannot do anything to it. Either you can remember and recognize and be transformed, or you can go on doing things which take you away from it, and you can completely forget the way back. But whether you are positive or negative, your innermost Buddha remains the same. You cannot do anything favorable or unfavorable to it. It is your transcendence. Before we enter into the temple, to have a look whether the Buddha is there or not. Few little laughs, just to prepare the ground . Laughter takes away much of your seriousness, which is a hindrance. It takes away your burden. In a deep laughter, you become total. It is not that you laugh 50%. That this time you laughed 30%. When you really laugh, remember Sardar Gurudev, who laughs 100%. And it does not matter whether it is time to laugh or not. Laughter in itself is such a healthy, enjoyable phenomenon that you don't have some reason for it. The jokes have to tell you just because you will not laugh without a reason. It is unnecessary if you start laughing without reason. That will be more spontaneous and fresh. Soon it will come a time that just a drum and everybody goes 100%. These jokes are only for the beginners. The old sinners don't need it. It is the weak end in hurling, and we find Jabrisky in all black disco called the Harney Honky. having a high time and partying like crazy. A beautiful woman named Kutchi slithers up beside Zabriskie and asks, "Hey baby, buy a lonely girl a drink." Zabriskie smiles at this unbelievable luck and says, "Okay, sure, but to tell you the truth, I would really like to get screwed." Kutchi is cool and she can dig it. So she takes our Pulak by the hand and leads him across the smoke-filled music-thumping dance floor to a door with a small slit in it marked "Private." "Just wait here, white boy," says Kutchi, and she disappears behind the door. Suddenly the slit opens and a woman's voice asks, "What would you like, sugar pie?" "Like?" repeats Zabriskie. "Like I said, I wanna get screwed." "So think, darling," replies the voice, "but as you can see, this is a private club. You have to slip 100 bucks into this slot for a membership fee." At this, the partying Pulak shouts, "Right on, get down and get funky," as he puts a $100 bill in the slot. 5 minutes go by and nothing happens. So Zabriskie knocks again. When the little slot opens, Zabriskie asks, "Hey, wanna get screwed?" "What?" comes the reply again. Devagit and two friends are hailing a rickshaw when they see pretty young ma, young yoga butter, also trying to hail the same rickshaw. Devagit, seeing the situation and being such a gentleman, offers, "Come on, butter, you might as well sit on my lap. I'm too old to give you my seat." "And don't worry, I'm too old for it to be dangerous for you to sit on my lap." Yoga Butter smiles and accepts the invitation. But after jolting around Bund Garden Road in the rickshaw for a while, with butter bouncing all over his lap, Devagit smiles and says, "I'm afraid I was wrong, butter. You will have to get off. I'm not as old as I thought I was." A potato and a carrot are hitchhiking at the side of the road. When a cyclist comes around the corner and runs down the potato, the next day the carrot goes to visit his friend in the hospital, the potato does not look too good. Tell me, Doc, says the carrot, anxiously, do you think my friend will be okay? He may recover, replies the doctor, but frankly, for the rest of his life, he will be a vegetable. Olga Kovalevsky wins the draw and is selected to be a competent contestant on the famous TV game show Popular Pollocks. It is the end of the show and the excited MC announces the final category of questions and the grand prize of $1 million. Olga is selected and the MC asks, okay, Mrs. Kovalevsky, for $1 million, what category of questions would you like to choose from? Well, says Olga in a nervous voice, I think I will choose religion. Good, shouts the MC. From the category religion, and for the big money, the question is, what did Eve say to Adam that fateful night in the Garden of Eden? Olga gets worried and thinks, but after a few minutes she gives up completely and says, ah, my God, that is a hard one. And the MC shouts, right, you win $1 million. Close your eyes. feel the body to be completely frozen and to go in. Deeper and deeper. You have nothing to lose but to find your eternity. No desire, no longing, just going for the simple sake of finding out the Buddha. Everybody who has gone in has always found him, without any exception. To make it deeper and more clear, Nivedana, relax, let go, feel the body apart from you, the mind apart from you. You just be a watcher. This watcher is the Buddha. This blissful evening, and thousands of Buddhas makes this place the holiest one. This moment the most miraculous. Nivedana, call all the Buddhas back. Come back with your full glory and ceremony and grace. Sit down at least for a few minutes. Recollect the experience. Be soaked in it. Drunk with it. Drowned in it, so that it can become a constant stream flowing in your every action or non-action, waking or asleep. This way I teach you the Buddha. You don't have to become Buddhas. You are just a little recognition, a little courage to look within yourself. Okay, Manisha?
Yes, Bhagwan.
Can we celebrate all the Buddhas?
Yes, Bhagwan.